This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we're going to be joined by a Naples High School senior who helped produce a short film about human trafficking. And we'll meet the Collier County Schools District Liaison for Homeless Education to learn about how being homeless can put people of all ages at risk for human trafficking. But first, January is National Slavery and Human Trafficking Prevention Month, and we've covered issues surrounding human trafficking many times on this show over the years, but it remains a serious problem in this country, and that definitely includes right here in Southwest Florida. Human trafficking affects adults and children of all ages and demographics. Traffickers trap their victims into various forms of abuse, from domestic service to commercial sexual exploitation. This can all often remain hidden because victims are reluctant to get help for a number of reasons, including language barriers, fear of traffickers, and sometimes fear of law enforcement and lack of trust. So for the first part of today's show, we're bringing back into the studio representatives from the Fort Myers-based Human Trafficking Awareness Partnerships. Nola Thies is the partnership's executive director and founder. Nola, welcome back to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you so much.
I'm also joined by Lauren McCraney. She is their program coordinator. Lauren, welcome back to the show, and thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm also joined today by Dr. Wendy Chase. She's a humanities professor at Florida Southwestern State College, and she's also the programming coordinator for the university's honors program. FSW is working with Human Trafficking Awareness Partnerships this month for several events and a photography exhibition to raise awareness about human trafficking. Dr. Chase, welcome to the show, and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much.
And as always, we invite you to join our conversation. If you have a question or comment or a story or a firsthand account of human trafficking, the number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, Nola, I want you to start by reminding our listeners what the Human Trafficking Awareness Partnership does.
Well, what we do is we educate people in the community about human trafficking. We focus a lot on children because children are very vulnerable to this. They are easily tricked by adults and even sometimes their peers into doing things that lead to them becoming enslaved. When I say enslaved, I don't mean necessarily tied to a bed. I mean they feel that they have to do what the trafficker says. Right. And that's very important for people to understand that the chains we use in trafficking today are invisible chains, but they are just as effective, maybe more so.
Well, there are a lot of different kinds of chains. There's a psychological chain of believing that this is what your value is as a human. There's also the chain of fear, the fear
Absolutely.
Of, especially if somebody is from a different country and dealing with that. That's another fear situation that could make them unwilling to come forward or sometimes unable because of a language barrier.
Right. Some of the most famous cases that happened really in the country, but locally in Fort Myers and Cape Coral, the first case that came to everyone's attention when we first started organizing a task force with the sheriff was involved a 13-year-old Guatemalan girl who was held captive in a house in Cape Coral for a year and a half, made pregnant, and then beaten up so she'd lose her child. And she was forced to work as a domestic servant in the house and as a slave sex victim by the man who worked there, the man who lived there.
When was that?
That was in 2002, more or less. The information came out in 2005.
So you've been working in this for a while then?
Yes.
What, have you seen changes? Have you seen this practice evolve?
Yeah, I have. What I've seen is the attitude of people evolve toward the practice. The practice has been here for a very long time, but now we are aware that, you know, there's a name to it and that there are laws protecting the victims and that there are ways to identify victims and that there's a role for citizens to play in getting the victims the help that they need without endangering themselves putting themselves in a situation that's uncomfortable. So we're trying to do that. We're trying to educate. When we started, we were educating adults. Now we educate adults and children. We just did a program yesterday at the STARS complex called Prevention Power, and we worked with kids who were as young as 4 or 5 up until they were probably 20, were the oldest kids there. And we gave them facts about trafficking and talked to them about it and got them to understand that maybe their own neighborhood wasn't safe, that you couldn't say, well, I don't have to worry about that. That happens in other places. That
or
happens
other
with foreign people. Mm-hmm. But doesn't happen to me. And so we were able to have conversations with them about it. And it was wonderful to see because a lot of them were families. They were four or five siblings, and the older kids were learning, and you could see them kind of, as they walked away, explaining it to their younger siblings. Mm-hmm. And some of them brought their parents, and so the parents were also watching and listening and adding.
It's great having a family like that, mm-hmm. because then they know what language one another speaks to make it
Absolutely.
Understandable, especially
Perhaps.
For the little kids, what
Right.
their exposure's already been. When you first embarked on this, was the awareness to make people aware that it could be happening next door, or was it awareness to help prevent it from happening to someone that you know? Were you
at the time? Everyone was concerned about trying to save the people who were there, and how do we get them? How do we get them help? And then that has gradually shifted. We really shifted our emphasis around 2010, which is a long time ago now, and it toward, reaching the cops and the nurses and the teachers, but also reaching the kids, because we want to empower those kids to not only be able to recognize something before it becomes dangerous for them, when somebody approaches them, gives them things, asks them things that could lead to them becoming in love or getting a job with someone, to recognizing that, wait a minute, this is a bad situation. I should tell somebody, and I should really get out of here. I should get out of this mall. I should avoid that person.
Yeah, it's interesting. Even law enforcement's kind of evolved there, where mm-hmm. their view of an underage prostitute is what they would have called it before.
Right, right.
Now it's seen as not a person who willingly is doing that. So
right.
There's been a lot of evolution that's happened really quickly, and I think
right.
it may be because of the heightened awareness.
Yeah. That's what everybody thought at first, that awareness is what was needed. And we talk about the four Ps: prevention, protection, prosecution. And then I'll always forget the fourth one till a minute from now.
Okay, we'll get you. We'll get you in a minute. When
okay.
it comes, you just throw
right.
it out there.
I'll
when
just
it gets
throw
there.
It. But awareness is just the beginning, but it leads to all of those other things, so that we can. Oh, the fourth one is partnerships.
Partnerships. Yeah, I was just about to ask that.
Right. And so we know that awareness is really – I mean, we know about problems in Cambodia. We can't do anything about it, so gosh, that's too bad. But now we know about problems that are happening in our own community, with our own kids, with kids in groups that maybe are in more need than our kids who don't have language that our kids have, kids
– Or even just any kid that's going through the teenage years, which we all know are tumultuous.
Right. Absolutely.
And no matter how wonderful your family is, you could still be having a tough time as a teenager, you know?
Absolutely.
Because nobody understands.
And we say
right.
that all the time.
I would agree.
It feels like nobody does yeah. when you're a teenager. I remember.
Right. Kids, we talk about how kids make bad decisions. And I just said it at an event at United Way. And I said, you can say, those kids, they aren't ready to make decisions. I said, how many of you ever bought the wrong car?
Oh, I have. Yeah.
Yeah. And, this is a big deal, right? You really thought about it and you bought the wrong car. And so we're all capable of making a bad decision. But we have ways to control that and take care of it if we made a mistake. Kids
feel
get themselves
that.
Dug into a hole more and more and more unless they recognize what's going on.
So I'm going to turn now, Lauren, tell me a little bit about your role at the partnerships.
So I'm the program coordinator. I facilitate all of our outreach programs, so going in and educating the youth about what human trafficking is and then allowing them to create art from that information. And so the idea is that there's that intuitive part of the brain, and when you take something that is hard and rigid and you create a container that they can process it through the creation of art, they're able to, if they're at risk, maybe there's something personally in their lives, they're able to be able to process it within that environment and be able to reach out to, social workers that are involved with the community that we're engaged with, or just being able to digest it in a way that they can process going forward. And then the artwork that we create, there's a sense of empowerment and pride that goes into that too, right? Because they go from something where they're like, what do I do with this kind of information to, okay, well, I created this art and now it's going out into the community and here's a voice attached with this art on my understanding.
Is it kind of turning things on its head where it's, telling kids this is bad, be careful of this, be careful of then do they, when they create these kinds of pieces of art, do they end up then sort of taking ownership on helping tell other kids?
They totally do. Yeah. I mean, it's really unique to watch. I'm always amazed at the last day, when they're trying to rush to finish these paintings, they're running out of time. They know that this is the last day, and they're starting to engage. They're more open. I mean, their body language changes, and they're looking to take the opportunity to share with people and wanting to know where the painting is going to be, where other people are going to see it.
Because they don't want to see anything bad happen to anybody that's their age, their peers.
They don't. Exactly
so
right.
They kind of feel like, you know, they're out there trying to help make an actual difference.
Yeah. There's an empathy attached to it.
As opposed to simply receiving information
right.
for themselves.
Yes.
They're trying to share it with other people.
And since Lauren has come on, the number of exhibitions that we do, some of which may only be a morning long or some may be up at the Naples Art Association or at FSW for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks, that is, we just figured out today that it has increased by 200% in the last year.
Wow.
200%. Yeah, it's really great.
Yeah.
That's some good growth.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get them out there anywhere I can.
I know.
Yeah. So are you looking for places to be able to display these pieces?
Absolutely, yes.
And luckily, we've been doing it long enough that we have 150 paintings, so we can have them all over the place. And we're very excited about that because it just compounds the value of the program.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we're partnering with other organizations that are in the arts and humanities because, yes, we do these outreach programs that deal with these large canvases, but we're open to poetry, we're open to theater. We've done those kinds of things in the past. We're working with Wendy and FSW. I mean, we're trying to make sure that art's very much a component of that action of awareness when it comes to human trafficking.
So that makes me now turn naturally to Wendy Chase. I want to bring you into the conversation. How did FSW get involved in doing this?
Through Lauren.
Reached out to you and said, hey, what do you think about display? Are you going to be displaying some of these pieces of artwork?
We are. So she first emailed me with some images by the artist Kay Chernish, who was commissioned by the State Department mm-hmm. to document human trafficking through photography. But the work that she created to me was really compelling because the images are somewhat abstracted and they're very powerful yeah. and eye-catching, and they're attached to stories. The panels have some really literal stories about human trafficking, but the images themselves have just the right amount of realism combined with abstraction that some people, if the images are too graphic, they will turn away. You know, a lot of us, there's a really great film critic named Siegfried Krakauer, and he talks about films that approach really difficult subject matter like the Holocaust, and he says that film is Athena's polished shield. If you remember Perseus, who could only cut off the head of the Gorgon, he couldn't look directly at the monster because when we look at something that's too terrifying, it petrifies us.
Right.
And so what I thought was really interesting about Kay Chernish's work, two things. The way she created her images, which I think are very approachable, and then people will get into the details of the horror that she's documenting, but also that she wanted it to be outside.
So they're going to be words next to it explaining what you're seeing?
They're large panels, and they're outdoor in the Garden of Inspiration placed between the Barbara B. Mann and our library. So not only will all students have access to them, but quite a bit of the community mm-hmm. comes mm-hmm. into those spaces. So we tried to put it in the most a very well-trafficked part of campus, and that was the other element that was very compelling to me, was that it was going to be outdoors.
Yeah.
So it needs to be in the public realm. We need to start bringing this out, even as they know. And they
but not
have
in a
doing.
Way that makes people recoil and miss the whole
exactly.
point.
Exactly. Right. Or want to turn away from it. This
and,
is attractive.
And in a strange sort of way, what you're describing, the abstractness of the paintings, mm-hmm. makes you look at the painting in mm-hmm. a way that you would not have seen it. And
exactly.
the childlike quality of some of the kids' paintings, because they're only 8 years old, mm-hmm. So some of the paintings are very sophisticated, but some are very simple and use symbols that are comfortable in some ways to a child, but then it becomes, instead of a comfortable thing, it becomes a thing that could happen to them because it's within the realm of their experience.
Well, when you see something from a child that's even talking about that existing, it's right. upsetting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
But they got to know it's out there and that it's a possibility. And even on a college campus like yours, these are women and men that are in the 17, 18, 19, 20-year-old range, which is also a point in life when you feel like you're pretty much bulletproof. You know, you just
exactly.
nothing's going to happen to you,
right?
But then having that kind of confronting you as you're walking from space to space, but not in such a confrontational manner that you don't pay attention to it. Now, these are – she photographed cases of trafficking in 2006 for the State Department. And does she talk about some of the events that she was photographing in the artwork? I mean, is there like a little next to the panel, like a
Everything
descriptor?
Everything is explained, and there's an introductory panel too that also gives people a lot of information about how to identify people who are being trafficked, what to do, where to go, who to call. So there's a lot of also very pragmatic information.
So call to action stuff.
Right. And she's going to be giving a talk also on Wednesday at 2 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. On Wednesday at 2.
Yeah, we've organized several events around her exhibit.
Are they up now?
Yes.
Have you seen students taking them in?
Yes.
What has been the reaction?
From what I can very concentrated. I think, you know, millennials get a bad rap, I think, for being apathetic.
No, they're pretty engaged.
They are complete. That's what I was going to say, is these events like this are absolutely draw them, and they bring that you see them walking over to grab someone else. I saw a student go get someone else to pull them over so that they could take a look. And that was I think the exhibit had been up for 2 hours when I saw that happen. So.
Only 2 hours later, you see people dragging them.
Right.
Look at this. Would you?
Yeah, take a look.
So on January 24th from 5 to 8, there's a showing of a documentary. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about this documentary that's coming
up? That's The True Cost, which talks about the how clothing is manufactured by people who are basically receiving slave labor. They are slave laborers or almost as close as you can get. They're given so little money and no options, so that they're separated from their families. The conditions they're working under are horrible. And the Western people who are describing and defending what they're doing keep saying, well, they keep offering less and less money for the work. We have to take the work, and then we have to cut these people out. And the women can't afford to have their children with them. They have to keep them out in the country with their grandmothers because they see them once or twice a year. It's all just building up. But then it's also building up over here. And that's the thing that's really scary about that movie, is that you realize how much you're contributing to that slavery just by purchasing clothing
that is
you
cheap.
Don't need, and you don't need it.
Yeah.
Well, I think the reality is 2% of our clothing is made here in the U.S., right? So when you start looking at the cost of your clothing, you have to wonder, well, what is the cost? And so that's obviously the theme of the documentary.
The true cost.
The true cost. And one of the great things that we've also coordinated that night is that Eileen Fisher will be Skyping in from their headquarters to be able to talk about their mission as to why they choose to have slave-free clothing, you know. So that's a great, great addition to that night as well.
It's just disturbing that it has to be groundbreaking to have slave-free clothing.
I know. Right. That just using that term, right? Doesn't that make you cringe?
Yeah, I really do cringe.
Yes.
And we were talking before we went on about the slow clothing movement, which is kind of sort of like the slow food, but you're not consuming clothing. Right. But talking about how just using something, getting something really cheap, it falls apart or, you know, it's out of fashion and just throwing it away. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of waste, but then there's a lot of consumption.
Right.
And that continues to fuel that need for the really cheap labor to make a whole lot of really cheap stuff.
Right, right.
And then continue sending it around. So the slavery and trafficking is not just about sexual slavery.
Absolutely.
And there's so many angles on this. It's just kind of hard to, first of all, take it all in.
Right.
But then it's just kind of hard to parse it apart, you know? You have the slavery of people that are being forced to work for almost nothing to make clothes so we can have cheap clothes. Mm-hmm. But then there's a possibility that somebody is walking by one of these pieces of art at the Florida Southwestern College campus and seeing something and going, I think that my friend might be involved with a guy online and this could be happening.
Right. Yeah.
So it's all around the globe. How are you able to parse that out? Do you have like?
Well, I think it's interesting that when we started doing this intense work in Lee County in Southwest Florida, we were focused on foreign victims who happened to be here, migrants and other people who were here they came here voluntarily, or they were actually shipped in to do work. And
or brought in by the coyotes we hear about all the time.
Right.
And they end up working for almost nothing, doing yard work or house cleaning and things like
Absolutely.
That too.
Absolutely. And you know that they're here because whenever there's a big storm, who's cleaning up the debris on those mm-hmm. streets?
Right.
Who's helping on the roofers? Who are those roofers? There's a few people who aren't foreign looking, but most of them are. And I know when I was on Sanibel and we were putting in sewers, I kept thinking, all these ditch diggers, where are they coming from? They all look like they're coming from the same place. And yet we what did we do? I mean, I'm sure the city
Nobody's
checked.
Asking questions.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Yeah, that's right. So that's something we have to be super conscious of.
Just as an employer or a person that mm-hmm. happens to benefit from this work.
Or somebody who would go to the city council and say, do you know where those workers are coming from?
And how did you contract that work out?
And
so that – I wanted to make sure that we get the information out that screening of that documentary is going to be on January 24th from 5 to 8 p.m. Where is that going to be?
In J103, the Rush Library Auditorium on the Lee campus.
And then there's going to be a panel afterwards.
That's a Skyping in from
Eileen Fisher. Is that happening on the same day?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's right after the screening,
right
just
after
following
the screening.
And then there's also a human trafficking prevention roundtable that's going to be held on January 31st from 2 to 4.
Actually, we are changing that time to
12:30.
That just happened today.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, I'm sure you're keeping your website updated when
they're
ever changing.
Changed that right before we got here, yes.
Where can people find out more information as far as a website, just, you know, to get the very latest?
It's on the FSW calendar, our events calendar, mm-hmm. which is linked on our homepage.
Okay, and we have that linked on gulfcoastlive.org too.
Oh, good.
So I think we've linked over to all of that information. And mm-hmm. so who's going to be participating in that roundtable event? Do we know yet?
State's attorney.
Okay.
Francine, I'll never get her name, last name, Donna Romo, mm-hmm. and a law enforcement person. And I think we've also invited Eileen Wesley from Project Help, people who provide services for sexual crimes. And we're still working on it. There are a lot of groups.
Arts for Acts will be there as well. Yeah, it'll be a really great panel discussing how it's happening here in our community and what we're trying to do to combat it.
It's a good ending because of the month, because it is the people who are really on the ground doing the work with the victims.
Were you going to say something?
Yes. I just wanted to tell people, too, at the opening of Kay Chernish's talk and the outdoor exhibition, we're also doing something called the Red Sand Project. And so she's going to talk from 2 roughly till 3 o'clock mm-hmm. in J103 on this Wednesday. And then we're moving into outdoors to the area where her exhibit is. And we'll have food and refreshments. But students will also be there to help with another art project. That's mm-hmm. an international project, and they will be filling in the cracks of the sidewalk with red sand, so symbolically to expose the fissures in our society that have allowed this to happen, to hopefully try to fill those cracks, but to just raise awareness. And so, again, I think what Lauren was saying in the beginning of how even the kids who are making art about this, you can feel so helpless in the face of big –
You really do.
You do. And it sounds like, well, what would filling red sand in a sidewalk do to, you know, in the face of this overwhelming thing? But somehow it does make you feel like you're actually taking an action and you're moving your body and you're trying to call other people to action. So everybody is invited to that. I have 60 pounds of red sand in my office right now.
I can totally see the value of that, though, because like you say,
it's a simple gesture.
You hear about this, right? You hear about human trafficking, but I don't have direct connection to it.
Yeah,
so I don't feel like how can I do anything in the world?
Exactly.
I mean, I can consume fewer pieces of cheap clothing, right? And, you know, pay for better quality things that are made in responsible ways. So there's one thing I can do. Keep my eye out, maybe. And like educate people that I come into contact with that it's not just people from other countries anymore. It never has always been uniquely that, but, you know, just make people aware of that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it's just kind of, you feel so helpless. But being able to participate in art like you're talking about, it feels like that may move the needle a little bit more than words. Mm-hmm. Tend to do in this awareness,
especially
fight.
When it leaves you speechless.
Right.
I mean, something that leaves you without words to describe, like, you know, what human trafficking. So.
Yeah, I've had human trafficking victims on the show, mm-hmm. and listened to them tell their stories, and there's just nothing you can say.
Yeah,
I mean, just so sorry that
Mm-hmm.
It's really a tough one. Have you ever, I'm wondering, been in an experience with Lauren, when you're working with students who are putting together these pieces of artwork, mm-hmm. and it dawns on them mm-hmm. that something's happening in their world that's kind of not right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's no denying it. I can see when I've hit a nerve. And that's why we make sure that whenever we're doing these outreach programs that we always have the professionals that are trained to have therapy with these students after we've done an outreach program to say, hey, you know, mm-hmm. How you doing? You know, because we do hear quite often after we do an outreach program, that there is someone who says, I need to talk about what's happening in my life.
We had one girl at a home for foster girls who was very arrogant. And the first year we did the program, but she participated. The second year, she talked to one of the volunteers and said, Now I know what Miss Nola was talking about. Mm-hmm. That's what happened to me. And that guy made me talk my 12-year-old sister into coming and doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so we told that information to the head of the organization and they got her help. And we just heard last week that she's still there because she had a baby and she needs to learn how to be a mother and she's safe and protected in that place. And, but she is doing great. Mm-hmm. But it took 3 years.
But the art allowed her to process it.
Right.
I mean, that's what she even said. She's, mm-hmm. you know, there's a beautiful poem on the artwork. It gave her an opportunity to express it out of her body that then mm-hmm. she could be able to communicate it afterwards.
Mm-hmm. I just can't imagine being in that situation where someone comes to you and says, you know, now I get what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And she's in her teens.
She was in her teens. She was probably at that time maybe 15 when she told us. And she'd been involved. She had a baby who was a year and a half old probably. I have to say that I have such respect for the people who do take care of the victims and who are out mm-hmm. are there to do it. Sometimes I feel like we've taken the easy way out. We get to work with kids and hope we're reaching and having the facilities available to us, but we don't have to go through their personal agony and which so many of these other organizations do. But I'm not saying that awareness and prevention, those are the things that are probably in one way totally valuable because we're reaching so many people and so many people might not get involved. We'll never know that number. But we can feel good about what we're seeing as the process is going on. And God bless the other people.
But the other part is picking up those pieces
mm-hmm.
with those kids and putting them back together.
Right.
That's just another arduous task and really
– that's a trauma. You know, it's they have to heal. That takes a long time.
Exactly. And I'm wondering, Wendy, with the students that you're working with at your school, I mean, have you encountered any of this as far as – kids coming to you and saying, gosh, something's happened, anything like that? Or you're just right now working with the art and putting it out there in front of them and hoping the conversations happen?
Right. No, I haven't had any direct experiences with students coming to me yet, thankfully. But hopefully if they need to, they'll feel like they can.
They're always welcome to.
Yes.
Well, any of us.
Sure.
Are there any final thoughts that anybody wants to add before we wrap up? Because we're about out of time for this segment.
Well, I just think that it's really good that you're bringing in a high school student who can be talking about this. We've had the luck, really, to be reaching out to high schools in Lee County and middle schools. And again, we only have 80 minutes at a time. We can't start an outreach program with them. But so often as we're talking, you see the kids starting to squirm. And they're not squirming because they don't want to be there. They're squirming because something's happening to their bodies and something we said is affecting them. And, you know, you never know. And that's why as parents, as grandparents, as neighbors, we need to be conscious of what's going on in our neighborhood, because sometimes it's the person who's not directly with that kid every single day, or, you know, who can notice something and risk being a busybody to save a child's life.
Yeah, not be dismissive of those
things, right?
Well, that's all the time that we have for this part of the show, but I want to thank my guests from the Human Trafficking Awareness Partnerships, Nola Tice. I messed up your name earlier. I'm sorry. Nola Tice, she's the executive director. You'd think I'd know that by now. Thank you so much for coming in again.
Thank you.
And also Lauren McCraney is program coordinator. Lauren, thanks to you as well.
Thanks for having us.
I also want to thank Dr. Wendy Chase. She's a humanities professor at Florida Southwestern State College and program coordinator for FSW Honors Program, and helping coordinate this exciting art week in a month, actually, and talking about and having these tough conversations. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
We're going to take a short break, but when we return, we'll continue our conversation about human trafficking. We'll meet a Naples High School senior who helped produce a short film about human trafficking that's aimed at fellow students. We'll also meet the Collier County School District Liaison for Homeless Education to explore how homelessness can put people at the highest risk for human trafficking. And we're joined by the president of the Florida Coalition Against Human Trafficking to get her big picture view. If you'd like to be part of our conversation, you can give us a call now at 877-428-8255. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.